tape is rolling. Sean, can you give us a brief summary of the storyline of A Farewell to Arms?
Certainly. A Farewell to Arms is my grandfather's classic novel about World War I. It's a love story set in northern Italy about an American who joins the Italian army as an ambulance driver and falls in love with a British nurse named Catherine Barclay. Frederick Henry, the American soldier, is wounded, and the love story progresses. Catherine gets pregnant, and Frederick has to flee Italy because he's considered a deserter, and they leave to Switzerland, where she gives birth to the child, and tragically, she and the child die during childbirth.
So, a heartbreaking story in the end, in particular, some of the story is based on Ernest Hemingway's own experiences in World War I, right?
That's true. Yeah. Yes. He served as a volunteer ambulance driver for the Red Cross during World War I. And he also fell in love with a nurse by the name of Agnes von Karowski at that time. So some of his own experiences inspired the novel.
Now, do you remember the first time you read A Farewell to Arms?
I first read the book a long time ago during college when I actually had a semester abroad in Italy and I brought it with me. And I really enjoyed it. At that time, especially reading it in Italy.
Well, and you must have been thinking, my God, my grandfather wrote this. And I don't know, did that have special impact on you?
Well, it did. You know, he's always been a larger-than-life figure in our family. And even though he died before I was born, my dad was his youngest son. My mom also knew him as his secretary in the end of his life. He was a big presence in growing up as this sort of legendary figure, as a writer, even more than as a grandfather.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one of the peculiarities of A Farewell to Arms is that it turns out that Ernest Hemingway wrote lots of different endings, sort of like he kept trying to get it right. Do you know how many alternative endings there are to this book?
Well, my grandfather famously said in an interview in 1958 with George Plimpton for an article in the Paris Review. Plimpton was asking about the how much rewriting he did, and he said, "Well, I rewrote the ending to A Farewell to Arms." George Plimpton asked him about how much rewriting he did, and he said, "Well, in A Farewell to Arms, I rewrote the ending 39 times," and in working as the editor of this new edition of A Farewell to Arms, I found actually 47 individual endings in my grandfather's papers, which are preserved at the in the Hemingway collection at the John F. Kennedy Library as part of the National Archives.
I mean, those numbers, I mean, whether we're talking about 47 or 39, are astonishing. He would try to create so many different endings. Do we know why?
It is amazing, and I think it's a testament really to my grandfather as a writer and how hard he worked at his craft to achieve perfection. So it's an extreme example. I think he didn't rewrite most of his things that many times by any stretch, but it's a really good example where we can actually see, because he preserved those manuscripts, how he went about this process.
Well, and he also wrote later on, I mean, much, much later after he actually wrote the novel, in his 1948 introduction to A Farewell to Arms, Hemingway said, "The fact that the book was a tragic one did not make me unhappy, since I believed that life was a tragedy and knew it could only have one end." So I guess he was comfortable about leaving us in a pretty dark place at the end.
Yes, that statement sounds almost ironic, given that he rewrote the ending so many times and tried different kinds of endings. But he never. It's clear from the manuscripts that he always did know that the ending was going to be a tragic one. What's interesting, I think, in looking at all these endings, is to see that yes, everyone's life ends in death, but how you live your life and how it ends is important.
Now, do you have a favorite among all these different alternative endings?
Well, for me, my favorite, I think, is the so-called live baby ending, because the ending of A Farewell to Arms was partially inspired by the birth of my uncle Patrick, who was born during the time that my grandfather was writing the book, and my grandmother Pauline Pfeiffer Hemingway had a very difficult pregnancy with my uncle, which ended in cesarean section, and of course my uncle lived, but the drama and the difficulty of that pregnancy and how difficult it must have been for my grandfather there with her at the time played into his ideas for the ending of the book.
Could you read that ending for us, this live baby ending?
Sure. Let me just find the page here. Okay. So the live baby ending. I could tell about the boy. He did not seem of any importance then, except as trouble, and God knows that I was better about him. Anyway, he does not belong in this story. He starts a new one. It is not fair to start a new story at the end of an old one, but that is the way it happens. There is no end except death, and birth is the only beginning.
So he seems to be giving us a little bit of hope. Okay, the baby does live, but it's not. It's still pretty bleak.
Yeah, for him, it didn't seem the right way to end the story with a new story, basically.
Yeah. Now, there's an even darker ending, what has been called the Nada ending. Tell me about this one.
Well, that ending is almost like an existentialist take on life, basically. And I can read it. It's very short.
Yeah, if you could.
The Nada ending. That is all there is to the story. Catherine died, and you will die, and I will die. And that is all I can promise you. Now, that is a kind of a bleak, and it seems to me kind of a cop out of an ending. It doesn't get in. But what's amazing is that that's almost his, you know, philosophical ending. But then he goes into all these other endings, and he really, by the final ending, really achieves an extraordinarily poignant and powerful end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that Nada ending, it's sort of like he was channeling his inner Samuel Beckett there.
Yes.
There's no point to anything.
Yeah.
Well, and then there's another ending, what's been called the funeral ending. Could you read that one?
Sure. The funeral ending. After people die, you have to bury them, but you do not have to write about it. You do not have to write about an undertaker, nor all the business of burial. You do not have to write about that day, nor the next night of the day after, and the night after, and the progress from numbness into sorrow, nor all the days after and all the nights after for a long time. In writing, you have a certain choice that you do not have in life. I find this ending, you can see the writer, him working through, thinking, well, this maybe is a good way to end the book. But then as he writes it, the more he writes it, the more he realizes it's not how he wants to end the book.
Which is so fascinating to actually be able to see all these different versions. I mean, it sort of is like you're being let inside the creative mind of a great writer.
It's amazing, and I think it's true. I think it's true that most people have sadly experienced the death of loved ones, and there is all of that horrible reality of the burial and dealing with the remains and everything, but it's not what's important. It's not what you want to focus on.
Now, your grandfather, Ernest Hemingway, also asked his great friend, F. Scott Fitzgerald, to read the book, and Fitzgerald offered his own take on this. And it's worth pointing out they had a very complicated relationship, which probably played into Hemingway's response. But tell me about what Scott Fitzgerald suggested.
Well, Scott Fitzgerald was a great friend of my grandfather and an early mentor of his. and he had sought out his advice when he was writing The Sun Also Rises, his first novel. But he waited until the very end to really consult with him about A Farewell to Arms. And then when he did, Scott had wrote him over 10 pages of commentary about the book and suggested a lot of cuts. And he suggested a different ending. He suggested taking one of the most famous passages, what has become one of the most famous passages of the book, about how the world breaks everyone, which Fitzgerald called the most beautiful passage ever written in the English language. And he suggested ending the book with that passage, which comes much earlier in the story, in the novel. And my grandfather actually took to heart this idea because he respected Fitzgerald's opinion, and he sort of tried, he did write out an ending using that passage. But he didn't like it, and he decided against it.
Hmm. Why didn't he like it?
Well, I think he had it much earlier in the book, and I mean, his comments, handwritten comments on Fitzgerald's notes that are preserved in the Kennedy Library were "kiss my ass," EH. So basically, he decided to stick to his own, follow his gut and his own opinion, his own ideas of how to finish the book.
Well, we should talk about the actual ending, the one that that we all do know, the version that was published. And I'm wondering if you could actually read it. And I'm thinking maybe if you could start with the lines, "I waited outside in the hall."
Sure. Let's see. Okay. So this is the actual ending, the ending as it was published. "I waited outside in the hall. I waited a long time. The nurse came to the door and came over to me. 'I'm afraid Mrs. Henry is very ill,' she said. 'I'm afraid for her.' 'Is she dead?' 'No, but she is unconscious. It seems she had one hemorrhage after another. They couldn't stop it. I went into the room and stayed with Catherine until she died. She was unconscious all the time, and it did not take her very long to die.' Outside the room, in the hall, I spoke to the doctor. 'Is there anything I can do tonight?' 'No, there is nothing to do.' 'Can I take you to your hotel?' 'No, thank you. I'm going to stay here a while.' 'I know there is nothing to say. I cannot tell you.' 'No,' I said, 'there's nothing to say.' 'Good night,' he said. 'I cannot take you to your hotel?' 'No, thank you.' 'It was the only thing to do,' he said. 'The operation proved—' 'I don't want to talk about it,' I said. 'I would like to take you to your hotel.' 'No, thank you.' He went down the hall. I went to the door of the room. 'You can't come in now,' one of the nurses said. 'Yes, I can,' I said. 'You can't come in yet.' 'You get out,' I said. 'The other one, too.' But after I got them out and shut the door and turned off the light, it wasn't any good. It was like saying goodbye to a statue. After a while, I went out and left the hospital and walked back to the hotel in the rain." The end.
And that really is a wonderful ending, isn't it?
It is. It's the to my mind, it is the finest of all the different endings that he worked on, and you can see even in his manuscripts, which are presented in this new edition, how hard he even worked at that last ending. He playing with the words, moving, changing the words to give it the most power, and really cutting it down. And it's so much stronger, I think, to end the book there, where he's actually in there with her. I mean, he leaves afterwards, but that moment of realization when he's in there with her as a dead body is so sad and so real. It's much more powerful than the other endings that he considered.
I find this whole process so fascinating. I mean, that he played with so many different endings, and these were important differences too. I mean, do you let them live or not? I guess I'm kind of surprised that he hadn't figured that out from the beginning, that he still was undecided when he got to that point in the book.
It is really interesting. You know, I mean, when you think about writers, and I think every writer has different ways of their process is slightly different. But it's clear that he, you know, he had the general idea for the book, but he wrote about it, you know, as it went along. I think it developed, and his ideas of how it should end evolved as he wrote it. In fact, even he published the slightly different ending when the book was serialized by Scribner's Magazine, but right before before it was came out as a book, and he used a different ending in that, where he sort of, and it's a good ending, but it's not as strong as the final ending that he selected. He wakes up the next morning, and there's this sort of dreamy moment where it's almost as though it was a dream, and then he realizes, he sees this naked light bulb, and that he realizes that his life has changed forever.
Do you think he was obsessed with getting the perfect ending?
I think he was a perfectionist, and he really, it's evident in his work, and it's evident when you look at how, in the manuscripts of his work, that he really, he strived to make it as good as it could be. And I think you really see that in the ending of this book, which is a book that's also just beautifully written from beginning to end.
Do we know if Ernest Hemingway struggled with endings in his other novels as well, or was this a unique experience, his work on A Farewell to Arms?
Well, I've worked with a number of his books. I know I worked on the restored edition of The Movable Feast, and in that book he struggled very hard with the ending. Part of it was because that's a slightly different kind of a book, as a memoir of his time, actually these very years when he was writing The Sun Also Rises, and in the 20s when he was living in Paris also for A Farewell to Arms. But he struggled with the ending of that book, and in fact he never finished the ending of it. He died before it was published posthumously. Originally, as though he had finished it, but the restored edition shows that it wasn't finished. And part of his difficulty there was that he divorced his first wife Hadley and married his second wife Pauline, and writing about those issues and his involvement in them was very difficult, I think, for him at the end of his life to explain clearly.
Now, there's an extra non-literary factor here that to me at least adds some poignancy to this whole discussion, and that's how not only his father died, I mean, he killed himself, right? And of course, Ernest Hemingway himself committed suicide. I mean, we're talking about endings here, and I don't know what to make of that, but that how to end one's life would seem to be of great personal significance to him.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question to consider. I think, my grandfather suffered from depression at the end of his life for certain, and was in a very, was very ill right at the end of his life. So it's hard, certainly taking your own life as a complex, it's one way out of life, but his health really deteriorated dramatically, right at the end there. So there are a lot of complicating factors about how to discuss that.
Yeah. Well, and I go back to some of those original alternative endings that we discussed for A Farewell to Arms. I mean, he was committed to not giving false hope. I mean, you know, he felt that, I mean, in the literary sense at least, that there was a right way to do this and an honest way to talk about what happens when you die.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anything more to say there or not.
I think it's endings are interesting. I mean, beginnings and endings, but I'm not sure what to add there either.
Yeah. But, okay. No, that's all right. Now, you write in your introduction to this new edition to A Farewell to Arms, you talk about the iceberg principle in this book. Can you explain what that is?
Well, my grandfather said on many occasions that he wrote by the iceberg principle, which is that for the part that shows above the water, there's 7/8 underneath the water, which is to say that in his writing, he leaves an awful lot out and intentionally leaves it out. But if he writes well enough, you can still you feel what's there, what's underneath the surface.
Does that shed any light, do you think, on why he explored so many different endings for A Farewell to Arms?
Well, I think it. I think in the endings of A Farewell to Arms, it really shows to the extent to which he went to try and perfect his craft. The iceberg principle is sort of an explanation of how one of his ways of working, and you can actually see that a little bit. I think if you look at these endings, the last end, you know, the final ending of the book is it's less than a page of writing, and yet it distills all of these ideas. There's a lot that was in those other endings that the emotion of it is still kind of felt. I think you still feel it in the final version, even though that it's left out.
Now, you have edited a lot of your grandfather's work, and as you said, you never had a chance to meet him. But I'm wondering, given all of the time that you've spent going through what he wrote, whether that has given you a sense of what he was like.
I feel it has. I'm sorry that I never had the chance to meet him, but I think, and he was certainly a remarkable person. But my parents always said, you know, if you want to know your grandfather, read his writing, and he put a lot of himself into his writing, and I think that's true. I have felt not only reading the books, but also working so closely with his manuscripts, where you see, you know, actually looking at him write his handwritten pages and typed manuscripts with emendations. I do feel as though I've come to know him in a way, and he was an extraordinary person. Of course, also talking to people like my parents and my uncle Patrick and my uncle Jack, who's now deceased, and other family members and friends who knew my grandfather closely, or other ways that I've come to know him.
What comes through? I mean, this is a huge question. I'm sure you'd have lots to say, but what comes through as you read his work that maybe wasn't so obvious just by talking to your parents or other people who knew him?
Well, I've found. I mean, I think he was a person with an incredible memory, an incredible ability for observation. An artist. He was a complex person. I mean, the variety of subjects that he was interested in. You know, from war to painting, to fishing and hunting and bicycling, and it's very broad, bullfighting, so he was a very complex person. And then you also read his letters, and you see how funny a person he could be, and opinionated, I mean, he was clearly a person who could be a very good friend, and a person who clearly loved life in a lot of ways and enjoyed life.
A person you would want to know if you had the chance.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you very much. This has been a pleasure.
It was a pleasure too, for me too, Steve.
Okay, that is great. Thank you, and thanks for coming into the studio. Yeah, that was great. So
good.
Anyway, terrific. Thanks. And quite fascinating.
Well, thank you. No, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Okay, good. I hope you have a good day.
You too.
Okay.